Good morning. I hope everybody has a super day. As in our last two episodes, we have been discovering a little bit about the meaning of fear, also the meaning of happiness, and why people are so closed by their own ideas and their own beliefs. As of today, we're going to continue covering an extra topic, and we're going to be continuing reading this amazing book by Alan Watts. I think that the vocabulary found within this book, it's very profound. And besides being profound, I feel it's a vocabulary that can expand the way how you express yourself and the way how you make yourself understood. So keep listening, keep increasing your knowledge, and keep fighting for the dreams that you want, guys. Keep it up, right? So today we have the next topic, and I'm going to get started without further ado. The importance of conflict. The meaning of civilization is nowhere better explained than in the parable of the prodigal son. A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that belong to me." And he divided unto them his living. The younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance in a lot of bad living. And when he had spent all there, arose a mighty feeling in that land, and he began to be in want, and he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came back to himself, he said, "I will arise and go to my father, and I will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no more worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of the hired servants." And he arose and came to his father. And then son said unto him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in sight, and I'm no more worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry." Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. He was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, "These many years I serve you, and yet never gave me as entreated me as a kid, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son came back, which he hath devoured all your livings and all your money. Now you have killed for him the fattest calf. And he said unto him, Son, you're always with me, and all that I have is for you. It was meant that he should make merry. For this, your brother was dead, and is alive again. And it was lost, and now is found. Let's take a look into this parable. Civilized man is the prodigal, and the primitive is the elder son, who always stayed at home, unconsciously in harmony with nature, living more by instinct than intellect, and without the civilized man, acute self-consciousness. The primitive differs from us in somewhat the same way as the child differs from the adult. The child has no psychological problems of its own, and even if it has, they're only latent and do not manifest themselves until later life. This is super important. I'm going to repeat it again. The primitive differs from us in somewhat the same way as the child differs from the adult. The child has no psychological problems of its own. And even if it has, they are only latent and do not manifest themselves until later life. Its inner affairs are managed partly by nature and partly by its parents. Not until the sense of self-consciousness is fully developed does it feel that sense of responsibility which arises when we become aware of our power to direct and control our own affairs. But when man attains that state of self-consciousness, he becomes a prodigal. He feels isolated and lonely, and more particularly in his low moments, is certain that the universe is against him. Superficially, his whole culture is a violation of nature. He becomes utterly dependent on his machines and perishes when left to fend for himself against the elements. But soon comes the famine. In our own day, war and economic disorganization are the famine. There is no actual scarcity of wealth. Men starve only because of human stupidity. In time, there are some who come to themselves, realizing that in some way or other, we must return to nature and experience in full consciousness the harmony which the primitive has unconscious instinct. But it's not often realized that the apparent departure from nature which we have in civilization is an absolutely essential stage in man's development. Without it, we should remain like the elder son in the parable, jealous and unappreciative. For only those who have sinned can understand and appreciate the bliss of redemption. I repeat this again. For only those who have sinned can understand and appreciate the bliss of redemption. Perhaps, therefore, this wandering away from nature is not so unnatural after all, for it seems that our task is not to go back to nature, but forward. The Hindus represent the evolution of man as a circle. Starting at the top, he falls instinctively and unconsciously to the bottom. At which point, they say he enters the extreme of materiality and self-consciousness. The age of Kali Yuga. From there on is a very good word, he must climb up the second half of the cycle and so return in full consciousness to the point from which he began. But truly, to be united with nature again, he must first experience that absolute division between himself and the universe, or life. At this point, however, two things must be remembered. First, that civilized man's division from nature is only apparent, and it would seem that this very appearance is part of a natural scheme of evolution, something into which we have grown by instinct, as the caterpillar grows into a butterfly. Second, that although the return journey is done in consciousness, it is not done by unconsciousness. By the efforts of the self-conscious ego, this part of the journey is again as natural as the development of worms into butterfly. And any attempt to force this growth egotistically is like trying to open the worm with tweezers and hope to find a butterfly before the time of arrival, like the parable of the goose and the gold eggs. It only results in keeping us back in the state of acute opposition between ourselves and life. Here again, we meet with the familiar proverb that those who search for happiness do not find it, because they are trying to manufacture it by the very means which defeat it. Therefore, the first step on the homeward journey is to understand that we have never actually been cut up from nature at all, that our present acute conflict with life is necessary, is part of natural purpose, and that self-consciousness is not a denial, but a fulfillment of natural law. In other words, we have to accept that conflict because the ego can no more extract itself from it than a tooth can pull itself out of your jaw. The second step arises naturally from the first, by accepting the conflict between itself and life as part of the nature of life. The ego begins to feel itself in harmony with the dark side of nature. For the conflict becomes unhappiness only through our desire to escape from it. One more time. For the conflict becomes unhappiness only through our desire to escape from it, which adds one tension to another. But when it's accepted, we make a paradoxical discovery, namely that by accepting the ego and the conflict which it involves, we also accept and become united with that which stands behind the ego and takes on self-conscious form, that is, with nature. So we have like a little diagram here. I'm going to show you the diagram in a little picture, so I'm going to like show you what unconsciousness actually means. So going back to a little comprehension of this chapter, right? This chapter was called Importance and Conflict. And it starts with the parable of the prodigal son. You probably heard that parable before. If you have not heard the parable, I'm going to give you the reference so you can check it on your own, okay? Prodigal son parable. It's a Bible parable. It's in Luke 15:11-32. I'm not a religious person. I'm just letting you know. All right, so in this parable, he refers to a prodigal son who went away from home. He wasted all the money, all the resources, and then he came back to his father, and he said, "Father, I'm not worthy of you or of calling your son anymore. Make me part of your servants." But what the father did is that he immediately put him rings. He put them everything, right? He killed the biggest calf. Calf is like a baby cow. That's what it calls a calf. So, and then the older son was very harmed or offended by this actions of his father, and he said, "Well, father, I've been living with you all this time. Why you have not treated me like that, right?" As the father answers, "Man, you've been in this house forever. You've been having food. You've been having all these things, and there, and you have not taken advantage of them. Instead, you always been complaining. But now that your brother came back, he is now a new man. He was lost and now is found. He was not with us and now he is with us. He was dead and now he is alive." And actually, this parable refers to the actual civilized man, as Alan Watts says. Sometimes we are dead in our own conscious mind, in our own beliefs, in our own minds, and the things that we believe are true. And then when we realize that we can make a change, we can change our mind just by changing our thoughts. We can change our reality just by changing the way how we see life. Then we live again. We are live again, alive again. Sometimes we are lost in our own beliefs. Sometimes we believe something is the way it is because somebody has told us that that's the way it is. But when we discover other ways of making it happen, we see that there was another way of living. And that, therefore, we were lost, but now we are found. So the profound intrinsic meaning of this is that how civilized men go from being conscious to being unconscious, right? Like when you were born, you were born with no conscience whatsoever, just with the world that were around you. Now you probably be, or you could probably blame on your parents, you can blame on all the things that made you the person that you are right now, but that doesn't have any intrinsic meaning whatsoever. What it really matters is how are you gonna, now that you are experiencing this awakening, how is that you're going to go back to having the life that you want by accepting the things that you have and working with them? You might say, "Oh, is that I don't have a car to move around. Oh, is that my family is poor. No, is that I never had a father. No, is that my mom never likes me," right? I'm going to tell you a little story. All my life, my mom and my dad never supported me. Literally, they never told me. They gave me everything I needed. School and food and practically technology necessary to survive. I didn't have that good things, right? I never had a cell phone until somebody actually gifted me a cell phone. Gift is also a verb. So, but I am a person who's always encouraging everybody else to do what they can do. How is that possible? How is it possible that even though I never received any kind of encouragement in my life, I'm still able to have all these words of encouragement to others? Well, that's this, it applies the same principle of the prodigal son. Even though I was I was away from home, which was my true self, with my mind, my spirit, I never forgot my true essence. And when I discovered what I was able to do, I came back home, and my father, which is my spirit, right, hugged me. And with open arms, he put me rings, he put me shoes, and he gave me food. With that paradox, I'm trying to tell you that whatever situation you might encounter right now, you can come back home. You can always come back to the point where you feel yourself entirely. Remember what you were before having all those vices, before having all those problems. How was your life before that happened? How was your life before you met that person? If you could say, you know, I've having this problem since I was 9 years old. How were your life when you were 8? How was your life when you felt happy? When you remember those moments, all that you need to do is duplicate them. Duplicate the way how you felt before, and then you're gonna start having the results that you want. But if you keep duplicating the same actions that make you feel unhappy or unsatisfied, you will always bring sorrow and sadness to your life. So my questions for you are, how do you compare yourself with the prodigal son? What do you understand about this parable? If you do not understand the parable, you can read it. I tell you, it's in Luke 15:11-32. How does that compare to your life? And how can you bring more happiness? And how can you bring more acceptance to the things that you have? Have you ever gone to any conflict within your life? Let me know. Thank you very much, and I see you in the next segment.